Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and I am alongside, as always, Mr. Monsieur Casey Clapp.
Oui, oui, oui. Bonjour, Alex. I hope you're doing great.
Casey, you're hot. You're coming in hot.
Hey, like I always do. Everyone knows this. Casey's a firebrand. I actually dreamed the other day about yelling at someone about a tree. And being very vocal about making them stop cutting it. There was no actual situation, but I was convinced that sometimes it's probably going to happen again.
Casey, what's your sign? What's your birth sign?
I'm a Virgo.
Okay.
Yeah, late Virgo, though. I'd have to get my star sheet that was done by my delightful old elderly neighbor.
Oh.
She did a handwritten star sheet for me.
Wow.
Or astrology sheet. I guess I can't recall the exact term.
That's some OG hippie shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's good. Like, the whole thing. Like calculated by hand.
Yeah.
Stunning. Based on where I was born and my birthday.
Right. Very cool. Casey, this week's tree is the Italian cypress.
That is correct. Have you ever heard of it?
Cupresso Semperiense.
Yeah, that was good.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
Casey, the Italian cypress. How about that?
Sorry. So this tree, I'm very excited about it. I think you have cones for this tree right over there.
I sure do. This was one of the first trees that I learned to identify when we first started this podcast.
Yeah.
And there are a few specimens down the road for me that create a hedge.
Yes, that's
and
correct.
And I plucked a cone, a young, almost green cone from its branches, like the first week we started making the show.
Yeah.
I believe I still have it, and it opened up, and it's in the way it does.
Yeah, each scale there has between, I think, 7 and 20 little seeds on it, on a cone scale.
For real?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a cypress?
In a cypress. Well, at least specifically the Italian cypress, Cupressus sempervirens.
Let's get into it, Casey. Let's imagine, like we do every week, that you and I are walking through the Italian countryside. Ah, molto bene. And we come across what do you call that? A row of trees on the side of a road.
Ooh, an allee.
Yes,
of
an
trees.
Allee.
Yeah,
an allee next to a road of a dirt road.
Yeah, going to some villa.
Yes, where we'll eat. Where we'll eat ham and cheese and pizza.
Yes, and drink red wine.
Mmm.
Ah.
Oh, the time we spent in Tuscany.
Take me back, Alex.
Casey, let's ID this tree.
Let's do it. So the easiest, the first thing, again, you're walking up to this tree and you see this allee that you're walking by.
Yeah.
You know it's an allee because you got these two lines of trees on either side of this access path or this roadway, but they are perfectly, they grow perfectly upright and they're very columnar in form.
Now here's my first question.
Yes.
Is that by human interaction or is that how it grows?
That is such a good question. I used to think that's just how it grows, bros.
But
turns out, no, crows.
Okay.
It doesn't do it that way. This tree is so old in terms of cultivation and like interaction with humans that it has likely been grown as a vestigiate variety, but thousands of years ago, but nobody's ever kept track. They just had this tree. So there are these two versions, and so scientists have been like on the cusp of saying these are two different varieties of these trees. One grows with a horizontal branching pattern, similar to the Monterey cypress.
Okay.
And then they also say, well, there's also this other variety, this naturally occurring differences in species or in morphological characters, that this one grows very fastidiate, very upright and formal looking.
Fastidiate. That's yes. Just upright and narrow.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And so they thought that for a long time. And then other people are like, maybe not. Like, it actually, you can kind of interbreed with them, and you don't have a true to seed reproduction. So sometimes an upright variety will pop out seeds that have the horizontal variety.
Oh.
And vice versa.
Interesting.
So they're thinking it's less of a an absolute trait. It's more like an absolute trait that makes them natural varieties. They're thinking, that was probably someone found that, cultivated it, and now it's just been growing.
Sure.
My thing is, way back then, they didn't really have the wherewithal to do the kind of grafting and that kind of work you'd need. So if they had a upright growing tree, they probably took seeds from it, planted that, and got more upright trees, which leads you more to say, well, maybe this is a variety, because you get most, like, they just didn't really do the same kind of cultivation that, say, the Chinese or the Japanese were doing at this
sure.
time, for just natural trees that didn't have any specific, you know, benefit, I guess. I don't. That's a large term, but they don't provide food. They're not big shade trees.
I see, yeah.
They don't do a whole lot. I mean, I'm sure there's a medicinal value. You probably get different things from the leaves in terms, like, you know, vitamin C, stuff like that.
I would say they are a, you know, we talk about like a working tree, you know?
Yeah, right.
Or a tree that gives something back, you know, or a farm tree, like a hedge tree.
Exactly. This, like, leave it outside, it doesn't come in during the night.
Yes, that's a hawthorn.
Exactly.
Yeah. this is just like a, I don't know, this is like a museum tree. It serves a very specific purpose in my mind.
Yeah, exactly. But that purpose isn't necessarily like a utilitarian purpose. Like, it doesn't help. Yeah.
It's aesthetic.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly the right
idea. It's
vain. It is. Ew, that's a perfect thing. There are some words, Alex, that when we talk about this,
uh-huh.
it sticks in my brain as to something I want to take into consideration during the review period. Where when you can give, and this is, I know, like, the thing about the show that I love so much is that we can talk all science for whatever reason, or no science, doesn't matter. And then at the end of it, just have this like 100% anthropomorphized view of this tree.
Yeah.
And like, no, this tree sucks from my perspective.
Yes.
And I also think it's vain. I love that. Like,
I think it's very important that we can spend an hour talking about science and then throw it all away for a goofy gimmick.
That is
our podcast, and we've really grown into that. Doesn't make everybody all that happy, but it makes us happy.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks for the, you know, anyway.
Yeah, this is a vain tree.
Yeah, it is.
But however, Casey, this tree does do something kind of cool.
Yeah.
And that it is a conifer.
Yeah, so it, of course, produces cones.
Yes, let's talk cypress, Italian cypress cone.
So the cypress cone is a really circular ball. It has this one. Specifically, it has 8 to 20 seeds on each fertile scale, and it has like 8 to 14 or so opposite scales.
They must be quite small, no?
They are. They're quite small, but they also kind of move around a little bit. So like, there's some really tiny ones on the top, then really big ones on the side, but it looks to me like it's from a movie, and I don't know what. I think it's from Star Wars in some way.
The cone itself?
Yeah, where like, maybe it's from a Star Trek or something, where like, it looks like it's a perfectly closed, like, tight sphere, and then it like expands out, it's like, and then like, each one of the scales kind of pulls itself out, and then it has like these scales that come off of this main sort of central stem.
Hmm.
But it looks like I don't know what movie it is.
Oh, interesting.
But it looks like an alien thing, but like a machine, not an actual like organic thing.
Yes.
That then like basically it expands out, like rotates, and then like comes back in.
Yeah.
Like some kind of, I don't know, magic thing.
I feel like I know what you're referring to, but I can't. Yeah. I also cannot nail
okay,
it down.
Okay, yeah.
Casey, these cones are, what's that word?
Adorable.
The shield-like.
Peltate.
Peltate.
That is the term. They are, and each one has like a little point at the very end of it.
Yeah.
And that is that, people say that's what makes it look like a shield, but I think peltate is, as far as I know, a broader term. You don't have to have that point. But that is an umbo. It's an armed apophysi, which is the tip of the scale. The armament on it is called the umbo.
I will say this about these cones. When they're all closed up and kind of grayish brown,
yeah,
they look a bit like dog shit.
You think so?
Will you forgive me for saying so?
I will forgive you this time. But yeah, I can see that. Like if they're all kind of laying out there, maybe like big goat poop or something.
Yes, Casey, look at this photo I have.
Yeah, that's totally true. In fact, it's in the tree, but it looks like it's laying down in grass.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, from here, even worse. That's rough.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's not a great look.
Yeah, that's not a great look.
For a tree that values its aesthetics
yeah,
so much.
Yeah, exactly. But then again, this tree is native to the like eastern northern Mediterranean region.
Mm.
It's been able to spread throughout there, but that kind of just reminds me of like the Greeks in the Romans, where like the poopy part of the world was like just a given. Like you would have a conversation with a senator while he's sitting on his privy, or like you would in a bathhouse in like an ancient Greek city, and everyone would be like sitting there and they're pooping and they're doing all this other shit, and like they're just hanging out, they're talking, they're making deals. So I can kind of see that the tree is like gorgeous and beautiful, but at the same time, like poop is a part of its culture.
Sure.
So that's you know what, I'll give it a pass right now. I'll give it a bathroom pass.
All right. Oh, a bathroom pass. Yeah. Very, very well done.
Yeah, see, you can say really funny things that go way beyond me because they're too deep, and I just make bathroom jokes.
Well, we all have our lot in life.
We do. Mine is stinky.
Casey, let's talk leaves.
Oh, the leaves. Honestly, this is one of my favorite things about conifers specifically, but the cypresses. So these are scale-like leaves, and they are oppositely arranged along the stem. And they are what's called decusset. You familiar with that term?
Decusset. Is that where they lay flat on the stem?
That is where they lay flat, but then they switch like this. So they have like an X shape to them.
Okay.
If you look at them in cross section.
As they go down, they rotate 90 degrees each scale.
Yes, exactly.
Well, isn't that just they're alternately arranged?
Yeah, yeah, that's more or less, but like you can have alternately arranged that are also in the same plane so that they don't necessarily rotate 90 degrees.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the decusset means they have like an X shape to them. So if you look at them from the side, they'll have the one here and the one here, like a cross shape, more or less.
Hey, speaking of treeses.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of treeses references here.
Okay, yeah, I see that in those.
Yeah, and then they're also like this really dark dark green most of the time. They can kind of get a little bit purpley, or not purpley, more like a bluish tinge to them.
Yeah, they got a bit of a juniper color.
Yeah, and they are really closely related to the juniper. They are a sister phylum, or sister monophyletic group. Clade.
Wow. Cool.
So you have all the cypresses over here and all their ilk, and then the junipers split off from them some time ago.
Hmm.
And they have a little dorsal gland is what they call it. So a gland that produces a little tiny bit of resin.
Mm.
So that, of course, explains why it smells so good.
I see. The resin is the good smell stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So you crush the leaves and those resin glands kind of break open, and you get that really citrusy, you know, piney. I want to say, I don't want to say piney because they're not piney, but everyone knows the pine tree and the fir tree, that they have that flavor to them.
Yeah.
Has the same thing, except I think that cypresses are a little more sharp.
Okay.
They're not as mellow. If you break a fir needle, grand fir, for instance, they'll be really full of the citrus and the pine tree kind of Christmas tree scent.
Mm-hmm.
But they, for whatever reason, they feel like a soft smell to me.
Okay.
Whereas if you have a foliage from a juniper or a cypress tree, I think that they get a way more sharper, intense smell.
I get that. You know? It's a bit more astringent.
Yeah, that might be the term. Yeah.
Hmm.
So, but they're really beautiful. They're like, they cover their little stems and their stems pop out in every direction. So you get like these really wild looking, like little cattail kind of things that pop up everywhere. Like these, just the stems are perfectly scale armored. Mm. Each one, maybe an eighth or maybe a quarter of an inch wide. Like they're really thin and skinny. Then they just look so beautiful. Like they just grow out and they don't look messy. When you get close, when you look at them close up, you're like, those are very cleanly put together little leaves. But then as you step away, because they kind of all go out in different angles and different planes, they look somewhat messy from afar.
I will say this is one of my favorite types. A cypress is one of my favorite types of tree to run my hands through the needles.
Yeah, totally. Especially like, go like with the grain. Yeah. Then it's just like, phew, yeah.
It's almost like a little massage.
Yeah, I totally see that. And that's because they're not sharp. Junipers, they have them those sharp needles on them. They're sharp, all like scale leaves.
Cypress is the softer sister.
Exactly. It does not have any of those juvenile-like foliage.
Interesting. Casey, let's talk bark.
Oh, the bark. Honestly, utility bark, baby.
Wow.
Nothing interesting. I know it stays really kind of thin as it stays young, but as it gets older, it kind of develops a little bit like a furrowiness to it, and it kind of looks like the bark almost twists a little bit, which is pretty cool.
I think it's fine that it's utility. You can't even see the fucking thing.
Exactly. Usually it's way like completely covered by the branches and stuff. Right?
Yeah.
But as it gets older, as you get like one of those bigger ones that grows more horizontal, you can probably get a good look at it. But it's very like, it looks like a paintbrush kind of went there. But like, you know, like old artists, like the famous ones, when they have their brush strokes, it's kind of like they do a quick like whoosh, and they kind of flip at the end or something like that.
Sure.
So you don't get these long, perfectly straight lines.
Uh-huh.
That's what I see with this, where it looks like you have a bunch of different paint strokes that are short, that are long. Some go a little bit off to the left. Some go a little bit off to the right. Some go perfectly straight. So the lines kind of all intermingle.
Yeah.
That's what I see when they're young. When they get older, just imagine that was an acrylic paint that is now cracking.
I mean, that sounds kind of nice.
It does. I guess that, I mean, it is nice, but I guess it's, I don't know. I'm torn. It's right on the cusp. Like you could, again, it's the same thing about this tree or the ilk of this tree. You could lump it one way or you could split it another.
Casey.
Alex, I don't know what kind of bark this is.
Almost by design. Today we're talking taxonomy.
Oh, yes. Yes, we are.
The wild world of... And we can't do that before the break, Casey.
No, we can't. We have to take our time.
Let's hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back with Completely Arbitrary.
Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons, and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts, so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees, get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring!
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking Cypress Italiano. Cooperessu.
I love that. Cypress Italiano. You got it.
Cooperessu?
Capressus.
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 Why don't you just do the Italian?
No.
Let's start that over. Let's pretend I just said Cypress Italiano.
Capressus semper virens. That's exactly right.
Wow. Why exactly are we talking about taxonomy? Let's first define taxonomy for anybody listening who doesn't know.
It's a great question. So taxonomy is, in the broadest sense, the naming and ordering of living things.
Wonderful.
And it is also called systematics, where they are trying to, for lack of a better term, systematically order the world in terms of life.
This may sound very 101 for the listeners of this podcast, who most of them are, you know, tree people or scientific-based people.
Uh-huh.
But when we talk about, you know, genus of tree and species of tree and family and order and clade and all that nonsense,
yeah,
this is taxonomy.
Exactly.
It's that funnel that can't, that's
precisely
the domain, the kingdom. Hold on. Phylum, the class, the order, the family, the genus.
Woo!
And my favorite, the species.
The species, capital T.
Now I want to come up with a completely arbitrary acronym for this.
Oh, you mean like the old ones, like the mnemonics?
A mnemonic device, yeah.
It was like King Philip came over for getting spices or something
Sure.
like that. You also hit on the big thing, like that is what taxonomy ultimately is.
Yes.
And It's such a huge topic, like it's really hard to like cover the whole thing here. And a lot of the stuff we're going to be getting is from a book called Naming Nature by Carol Kesick Yoon.
Carol Kesick Yoon.
Yes, or it might be Kesick Yoon. But generally, you can find her online at Carol Yoon, two O's, online. And Carol wrote this book, Naming Nature, and essentially was like, yeah, I'm just going to write a quick book on how to, like, what taxonomy is. And then in the book, she admits, like, holy shit, I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
Oh, wow.
It goes way further than you ever thought that it ever did.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of a funny thing when you think about it, because everyone kind of knows, and if you do any scientific things like naming plants, everyone says, well, you know, here's our system of naming, taxonomy. And people say it was invented by Carl Linnaeus. We've talked about Carl Linnaeus. Yes, he's the Swedish botanist who started it all. I put this in quotes.
Yeah.
And he started, or he wrote a book called Systema Natura, which is actually, I shouldn't have added that French R. It's Latin, Systema Natura.
Okay.
And, or Natura. And essentially, that was he writing this book where he said, we need an organization for all the things that we're naming.
Yeah.
Because the French have a name for it. The Spanish have a name for it. The Russians, they have a name for it. And he was based out of Swedish. So I'm naming all these countries in Europe that was in his kind of orbit.
Sure.
And so he would say, well, we gotta come up with a standardized system for naming things. But not only that, we have to come up with a standardized system of how those things should be ordered. So you can name something, but then everyone's like, where is it? It's just this nebulous thing floating around.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And we'll get into why it makes sense also.
It does remind me of like dumping like a 30,000 piece puzzle out on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's like, gets in a circle. All right, let's put this together. Where's the reference image? What are we trying to do?
Yeah.
And you're like, there is none. Have fun.
Good luck. But yeah. Then each person like has a different vision of what it should look like.
Right.
So that is the real key to this. Hey. Where
it's like a good like this is like a good like 12 Angry Men type movie.
Oh yeah, each one like thinks it should be a different way.
Uh-huh.
Oh, this is exactly what we're talking about today.
Somebody get to writing.
Yeah, please. We need it. Wow, Carol already did.
Oh, Carol. Carol.
Messing up Carol and Carl Linnaeus, so I have to keep those straight today.
Carl.
Yeah. So he did this. Like, he created this first, like, universal thing, and he also came up with the binomial name, that genus and species name.
Yeah.
And his entire idea is, let's take all of these different things that are closely related, lump them together, and then put them in these nested little sections, like the little Russian dolls.
Mm-hmm.
But those Russian dolls, instead of having a smaller one, they actually get bigger as you go further down.
Wow.
So you have all the pine species, and then those are then lumped into one genus, Pinus. Then you have everything that is within that, or closely related to that genus, within the family. Now you have that pine family, so on and so forth, and you go up that ladder you just described to the family, order, class, phylum, genus,
mm-hmm.
all that. So as you're doing that, everyone's like, okay, this kind of makes sense. I'm really enjoying this. Everyone thought, Carl, this is brilliant. Like, this makes total sense to me. It makes sense to these people. We all can do this. And he said, but we need to come up with one name. So he invented the Latin binomials.
Pause, please.
Yeah.
We fucked up a bit.
How?
We need, I want to say this. Casey, why Italian cypress? Let's tease why we're talking about, because we took such a hard left turn after the break. I'm afraid people are going to get whiplash.
Oh,
podcast,
yeah.
Whiplash. It's a serious problem.
Totally.
Why the Italian cypress? Why discussion of taxonomy,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the Italian cypress?
Fantastic question.
I should have asked it earlier. I'm sorry.
That's you're fine. Luckily, we're going to come back to it around. Like, it'll all tie back into itself.
Yes, but it needs something to come back around.
We got to. Yeah, let's whet the appetite. The cypress trees, the genus Cupressus, has been it's hard to even like really understate it. They've been the point the apex of debates over essentially lumping and splitting.
Right.
And they have, like, that genus has been ripped apart, mashed back together. Certain bits have been pulled off. They found new species and don't know what to do with them. And then they say, well, this is a completely new genus. And they've done so much back and forth over, like, a matter of essentially 10 or so years. They started to, like, really dial it in, like, in the mid-2000s. But taxonomy, as you'll learn when you inevitably read Naming Nature, is something that literally somebody just made up, and there is no science to it.
Right.
In the way that we would expect, okay, science is math. You know, you add this, you do this, you have this, like, this is this because of this, and there, now you have this. In taxonomy, it's what you're looking at, where ultimately, historically, before the mid-1900s, we only looked at things and took our microscopes and said, this cone looks just like this cone, or this leaf, or this anatomy, this morphological character looks just like this one, even though the trees are different in some other way. So these are two different species, but their cones or their flowers or their, you know, pollen look really similar. So we're going to lump those together. That's how we did it. But you could look in a microscope and see something and say, that's just a little bit different, not enough to make it a different genus, you know, which is a pretty big, you know, expanse. Like, you're pulling it from a different species, one genus, to multiple different genus with only a single species in each genus, right?
The how about this, Casey?
Yeah.
The Cypress family is sort of the Stark family. In terms of, it is an unwilling casualty, wrong place, wrong time, in this 100-year war on taxonomy.
That is the perfect explanation. Alex, this is why you're here with me. When I can't babble my way into a very succinct, understandable sentence, you do.
That's extremely meaningful to me, Casey. Thank you.
That was perfect. It is the Stark family. That's a perfect descriptor.
They don't always land, folks, but sometimes they do.
And they have today. That is exactly it. So the talk about taxonomy is revolving around this tree. And really, it's around this tree, but also all the other trees that are around it as well.
Mm.
And the reason that it's around this tree particularly is that taxonomy, especially if it is a plant species that was in Linnaeus's realm, he named it first. And if he named it first, because that's basically the point zero in our modern taxonomy, anything that has a name that someone says, oh, this looks like this tree, I'm going to call it Cupressus Cupressiae, then someone says, no, that is the Italian cypress, it already has a name, someone already described it, you have to go back and give precedent to whoever described it the first time, like previously.
I see.
So if two different people find the same tree, one printed it and described it in 1984, the other did it in 1884, the 1884 one has precedent, and that's the name you stick with.
Is this just like an honor system? Is this written down somewhere in the bylaws of the Council of Science?
You know, I think there is. There's like an international database of these things.
Okay.
And there are, like, people meet up about this. There's, like, you know, hallways with leather-bound books of these people studying this thing.
Sure, sure.
But it is old-fashioned in that way, where this is the canon. This is the there's another term I'm looking for, and I can't think of it. Convention. It is the convention.
I see.
And the convention is not, you know, I think someone has it written down. There are some rules, but there's no like basis for those rules. Everyone just kind of got together and said, "Yeah, let's do it like this." Is that the best name? No, it doesn't matter. That's the first name.
Right.
So it doesn't always make a whole lot of sense, but you're exactly right. There is some group, but it's just a group of people who decided something, and now that is.
If this matters at all, I do imagine a semicircle of hooded figures in a stone cathedral.
And a giant oak table with a single candle in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's it. That's these people.
Yeah.
Well, so the reason that our discussion is literally wrapped around our Italian cypress here is that it is what's called the type species.
Type species.
Yeah, have you heard that term before?
No, I don't think we've ever talked about that.
Oh, I love when new things come up.
Me too, it's fun.
So the type species is the species that is indicative of the type. It is, of course, the typical species.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you see typical type, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So the idea of what that means is it is...
Oh, like typecast. You would say an actor is typecast. They play the same role, so they become that kind of... that.
Yeah.
Everybody sees them as that sort of...
I think you're on the right page. Obviously, it's the similar term usage.
Yes.
But let me like close it in a little bit more. The idea is a type is a type species... That is the thing that represents that kind of thing. So if you say, this is a cypress, you compare it to the type species to say, well, how cypress-like is it?
Oh, okay. It is the quintessential cypress.
Exactly.
Everything else must be compared to this cypress to see how cypressy it is.
Exactly. That is precisely it. And so then that makes it the name of the genus, where you say, this is a Capressus sempervirens. Anything else that they say is also a Capressus whatever else. And there's, mm-hmm. I think, this is a question between like 33 and 12 species, depending on who you ask, they will say that the because this is the first one in the archetypal cypress, lowercase c, everyone will say this looks like it, and if it doesn't look like it, this one has to be renamed to a different genus.
Wow.
It cannot be a cypress because this is the cypress, even if everything else changes. Capressus sempervirens will always be the Capressus sempervirens.
Okay.
And that was named by Linnaeus specifically. So you can't even go further back than that. Linnaeus is the point of origin for all
these.
Wow. So if someone else did it and they say, well, actually, Linnaeus already identified that, then you go with the Linnaean name.
Wow. So the Italian cypress is like... This is the truest cypress.
Yes, exactly.
The most OG of the OG.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other? Can we take a brief detour?
Ooh.
What is a? Is there a type? Type species?
Type species.
Like,
yeah.
Fir or pine?
You know, I'm sure there is, but I don't know. That's a really good question.
Should we elect some?
Yeah, I would think so. But like, okay, so if there's the term monotypic, mm-hmm. means that there's a single type in a genus, so it's a monotypic genus or something like that.
Okay.
It means that there's a genus with just one species, and that would be obviously the type species for that genus.
I see.
So then if you want to add something to that genus, it has to be really close to that type species. So in this case, it's probably inevitably going to be a European species, or one of the first non-European species to be brought in to Europe. In this case, the Italian cypress is the type species for cypress.
Got it.
So then that also makes it the everything else that like could be closely related. So the Capressaceae is the family.
Mm-hmm.
They have then decided that the cypresses are the type genus for that whole family. So now the family is named after that. Pinaceae is the same thing.
Oh.
So like pine is the archetypal thing for things in the pine family.
Uh-huh.
If the closer they are to pine, but not so close that they are considered Pinus, the genus, they're a different genus, but they're still underneath pine because pine is the archetypal pine family thing. I know. That's where we're stopping talking about this. Because
Casey's reacting to the fact that I just had like a minor, I had an event of some kind in my brain.
It's because it's like this, it's so much like weird abstraction, you
yes.
know?
Why is it so
Alex
absurd?
This is so fascinating, that question, where it's only absurd because you don't like have experience in it.
It's only, so what Casey is saying is it's only absurd to idiots.
No.
You.
I swear, that's not what I'm saying, Alex, okay, bro? It is an experiential thing, where if this is what you like go into and you like put your brain to it, then you can get it really easily.
Okay.
Let me give you an example that you may understand.
Oh, wow.
Pokemon.
Okay.
Now you've
totally fucked me here.
No,
now everybody
I haven't.
Knows that I like Pokemon.
No, you liked Pokemon. It's fine. It can be either way.
I'm
whatever
33
you want.
Years old.
Hey, good. I still play in the dirt. I mean, you're okay.
That's true.
Yeah.
You're more of a toddler than me.
Hey, I'm not going to say one way or another how you are interacting with Pokemon today.
Yes.
But at one point, you interacted with it, I'm sure, quite a bit, as most people listening to this also probably did.
Yes, yes.
And,
at one point.
And you and everyone else probably could easily say, oh, well, that one's related to that one, that one's related to that one. These ones in this like certain like fire family or
yes.
something like that.
Okay.
I don't know. So just keep
their types away. In Pokemon, Casey.
Yeah.
Fire type.
Thank
water
you.
Type.
See, I made up fire, actually. I wasn't sure. So
oh, yeah, you nailed
that,
it.
Yeah, so for the, I'm also giving away that I never did Pokemon as a child. But you, yeah, so that is something that you have experience with.
Yes.
You don't even need to memorize it. You don't need to look at it again. Like, you just, you have that in the bank.
That's true.
But there's also other things, probably universes that you really enjoy that you can say, oh, yeah, I have that all ordered in my brain. I can see one of these things and I know what nested category it is within other nested categories
right.
within an entire world or universe or canon or whatever you want.
Yeah.
You're right behind you is a poster of Greek mythological families. You are like mm-hmm. all about that. So you probably also say, oh, well, he is in this realm and this realm is underneath this realm, which
right.
is sister to this realm. Not realm, I guess. I'm thinking like realm, like a domain area.
Like a kingdom.
Know? Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's that kind of thing. So I happen to really like studying this when I was like, my brain was a sponge in early college, and I'm like, I want to know everything about this.
Yeah.
And so then I did it, and I started abstracting and thinking about it. I was also very taught in a, you know, not abstract, like, here's the lines, here's how everything's related.
Mm.
And then you could see really clearly, like, oh, okay, I see how these are all related now.
Okay. I can really appreciate what you're saying, Casey, because the amount of brain power I put into, like, I mean, not so much Pokemon, but like certainly like, I mean, I've had so many hobbies and obsessions over the years, as most people do. Anybody mm-hmm. who's ever like gotten really into Lord of the Rings for any appreciable amount of time.
It's a perfect Game of Thrones is a perfect example.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of these, any fantasy world is just scientific taxonomy.
Yeah. But just
different
fantasized.
Yeah. In a different frame.
That is precisely it, especially those that have such a big, deep background, because we have the entire existence of natural history as our, like, our universe in that kind of, you know, using that literal and figurative terminology.
That's some deep lore.
Exactly. It's deep lore.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at these things, but then we also, like, go backwards and we try to figure it out. Now, remember how I said earlier that Linnaeus is not the first person to do this?
I actually don't remember you saying that. I thought you explicitly said that he was.
Sorry. He was the first person. Here's what I said. He is the first person to do it the way we do it in terms of like science.
Okay.
But he's not the only person to ever order and try to name things.
Okay. Who do we have?
Well, even in Europe, I don't remember their names because they were unimportant to this conversation.
Okay.
There's just other people who tried it. Like they just said, well, I'm going to order things, but they would order it like they grow as a tree. Therefore, these are on the tree group. They
right.
grow as grasses. Therefore, they're on the grasses. These have purple flowers, so they're in the purple flower family.
We call this the John method.
Yeah, right? And the John method is like, well, that it makes sense, but then what about this? Like, the leaves of these look exactly the same, but they're in different groups because one's tall, one's short.
Yeah.
You know? So it was like, well, how do we figure out what to do? The big thing with Linnaeus is he said, let's use flower and fruit morphological characteristics, and that is it. The leaves don't matter.
Really?
They change. They're variable. Exactly. That's
okay.
what they're going with. And that is because those are the like the OG things that plants pass down to one another. Is most of the time the flowers and the fruit are going to be really similar, but then also the anatomy of like the whole flower part, the anatomy of the pollen, which would be in this realm, those things are big clues.
Wow. Kate, so is this why I can... Like, one of the first things that I got really confident in was, like, cone identification.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could say, I could look at a cone and be like, oh, that's a hemlock cone.
Yeah.
I could look at a fir cone and be like, that's a fir cone
mm-hmm.
or a spruce cone, you know.
That, yeah, could, either one, sure.
Yeah, and then I could, but I also would tell you, like, it looks like a spruce cone, but it's got hemlock elements, you know.
Uh-huh.
So is this because trees are like conifers are grouped it because due to their cone morphology.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly it. Now they have that, but then sometimes like the leaf arrangement or the leaf things also is a big thing. So for instance, pines always have these five or two, three, and five.
Right.
So you don't ever have a spruce that has that. And if you do, you might question like, well, is this actually a pine that has a really sprucey cone? Or is this a weird spruce that has this other morphological characteristic?
And this is how we get false hemlocks.
Exactly. And that's how you have to look a little closer to kind of see what it is.
Interesting.
So, but you're spot on, right? So that would be the John method. But there is an entire thing that we have been doing as humans that is a quintessential literal innate part of what it is to be a human,
mm-hmm.
which is naming and ordering the living things around us.
Yeah.
Everyone, everywhere, for all of time.
Totally.
So everybody in like lost tribes, and again, I highly encourage everyone read Carol's book because it's so good at explaining all of this. The tribes, and this is like all these things were done in the 60s and the 50s when we were, you know, like, oh, an untouched tribe in New Guinea.
Oh, yeah.
But really it was like, an untouched tribe in New Guinea. Right. We shall go with our hats and our guns and look at them.
Yeah.
Poke them with sticks.
This is the 50s you're talking about? The 1950s?
Yeah. Okay. And like the just like after World War II, when science is like National Geographic is like, we must go and find these peoples in these, you know, the middle of the Amazon and that kind of thing.
I see.
So once we actually started talking to these people and started to study these native peoples without going through and being like, hello, we will conquer you. You know, we've at least progressed this far.
Yeah.
And they are basically, they say, well, What are your languages? What do you call things? And they would have terms for all the same stuff that we do, just their own terms. And they would group everything, say, well, these kinds of trees or these kinds of plants or these kinds of fish or something like that are all connected. And they would have a term for fish. So when you think about it, like a squiggly underwater scaly thing, someone everywhere has a name for those things.
Right.
Someone everywhere has a name for those four-legged things that hop and eat bugs and sometimes have really fancy colors. They have a name for it. We call them frogs. They have a name for snakes. They have a name for those flying things. But here's where it gets interesting with these folk taxonomies, which are what they're called, is folk taxonomies are based on...
Folk taxonomies.
Isn't that such a cool name?
I love that.
Yeah, it's a little nice. I feel like it's also a little bit insulting where it's like, oh, this is a folk taxonomy, not a real taxonomy.
I don't get that impression.
Okay, good.
I think it's more prestigious and cool than, taxonomy.
Good. All right, then I take it back. Maybe that's, again, just my interpretation.
Sure. Well, we all have a different one.
Alex, I'm so glad you said that. Because all these folk taxonomies are based off of this concept, which is from a German word, which again, the Germans sometimes do things so much better than English speakers. It's called the Umwelt.
Oh, yes.
Spelled Umwelt.
Yes.
But the W is pronounced as a V.
Umwelt.
Umwelt. And the Umwelt is defined as the world as a particular organism perceives it. Or more specifically, it is the perception of the world by a particular organism.
Right.
So that difference is that the organism sees and experiences the world the way that organism does. This is not only at the individual level. You, Alex Grossen, I, Casey Clapp, see the world differently. Like we have a different experience of the world.
Yes.
To our own selves. But also, so do entire peoples, and then so do entire organisms. So in the grandest sense, a cat experiences the world the way a cat experiences the world. It's not how we do. It's not how a dog does. It's not how a bird does.
Right.
And so on and so forth.
Yes.
So there is a unique, like, it's an innately human thing. The human Umwelt gives you the opportunity to see things the way that a human does. So we don't smell very well. So everything's really visual, you know. Some people run around and they like touch things and we can climb and we have opposable thumbs. Like we think very specific thoughts that humans think. This is just what humans do.
Yeah.
Whereas a dog, maybe the dog's perception of the world, the dog's Umwelt, has a whole bunch more smell involved,
yeah,
where they just, like, that is a part of their sensation.
Right.
But they also see things and act differently, you know?
Yeah.
A dog has a wild perception that is way different than the human's perception.
I love that.
And it's not in a way to be, like, a dumber or better or worse or anything. There's
just
no comparison. It's just different. It's unique to that own organism and that unique species of organisms,
mm-hmm,
even between birds, right? So
that's the cool part, is that it's not just Umwelt is not just organism specific.
Yeah.
It is like species specific.
Yeah.
It's genus specific.
Mm-hmm.
It is in itself a taxonomical pyramid.
Absolutely. It totally is. And that and it changes and affects all the other things up and around it as you go through. So it's not only they're nested, but they're also like cross-pollinating a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
One thing nested inside of another, both of those things affect each other.
Yes, your Umwelt affects me and mine yours.
Yeah, and like a tree, if you give a tree an Umwelt, which I think is the perfect way to see it as without anthropomorphizing, in the sense where a lot of people hate anthropomorphizing trees.
Yeah.
We here have a little bit of it's a soft spot in our heart for it. But we also don't like to go too far. But if you say it's an organism, that's a fact. A tree is an organism.
Mm-hmm.
A plant is. That organism also perceives the world around it. People didn't think trees. They didn't think animals felt pain a while back. One of our listeners wrote in and gave us a good little bit about that.
Yes.
So, but it's also a fact that I think trees, you can say they perceive the world around them. Maybe we can boil it down to, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, just chemicals going into the other thing and then a reaction with other chemicals.
But that is their Umwelt.
What's the difference between us?
Yeah.
That's all we have in our brain.
That's true.
So it is. That's the Umwelt. They experience the amount of light, the scent that's going on, the moisture content, the humidity, all these things they're experiencing. Right?
Yeah.
So they also,
cool,
I think, have an Umwelt, and I think that's the perfect German way to say it. Everything has an Umwelt. An organism does.
I'd like to do something.
Yes.
The concept of Umwelt.
Uh-huh.
Gets Croson's stump of approval.
Vagoosh! Yes! Oh, every time I get a stump of approval on something that we bring up, it just makes me, I don't get it, but I take like a little credit for like having it. So I'm like, yes!
It's a very, very fun concept that really, really opens up the mind. You start thinking about, you know.
Yeah.
Every living thing has an Umwelt.
Yeah, and if you just give it the credit of having an Umwelt, then you have a little bit of compassion for it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's perceiving it. I don't need to say that it's, you know, necessarily sentient, but it'd be better if you did. However, this whole topic I was so like worried about bringing up because I it's a complex topic, and we've gone back and forth about this exact discussion several times.
Yes.
Where I was like, I gotta get this right, but I was confident that we could. So the thing is bringing the Umwelt back to taxonomy. Every literal person and peoples have this folk taxonomy where they would be bringing this up. In the book, they give some examples of like really strange taxonomy where in certain tribes, they have a cassowary, which is a gigantic flightless bird. They actually see that as more closely related to man. It's a brother of the tribe of men because it's a two-legged creature walking around.
Wow.
So they'd say that actually is in this other category. It's not in the bird category.
Sure.
And then there's a bunch of other like little strange, like, you know, idiosyncrasies that you see. And you're like, huh, that's really curious. But you can kind of imagine it. You're
of
like,
course.
That's how it is. That's how you saw it. So it also, in the larger sense, or in one of those, you know, hierarchical categories, you get that cultural and the experiential thing where it made sense to them to put these categories like this. Because it was, you know, it helped them somehow, or it just made sense. It doesn't matter if it helped or anything. Like, yeah, okay, this is over here. But in an evolutionary sense, of course, this developed, Alex, because that's how we navigate the world, right?
Yeah.
You and I, together in a tribe, have to navigate this world as a big unit. So if we can name and order things, then we can navigate it. We know that tree was really helpful to us. So this other tree that looks almost exactly like it, probably also really helpful.
Sure.
Tasty, not tasty, dangerous, you name it. It has all the things. The thorny things are bad. Everything that has a thorn, let's put that in a category of itself, it's bad. Whether or not it's taxonomically correct, don't go mess with the thorny things.
Unless we're talking blackberries.
Exactly. So then, you know, you got this, you know, it's a good berry, it's a bad berry. So you have maybe these crosses, but they're delicious, thorny or not.
Casey. Oh,
disgusting.
Disgusting.
Yeah, just the fact that they're so pokey, Alex.
Oh, I thought you meant the berry itself.
Yeah. So, Alex, I promised that I would wrap this back up.
You did.
And put a nice little bow on it.
You
right?
You knew my worries, Casey.
Yeah. I know. I rewrote this like three times last night.
Wow.
Trying to make sure I could do this. And
look
then
at you.
When it done, it worked out great.
A free podcast, folks.
A free podcast, you people.
Of quality.
So this is where it gets really interesting with what we do. So everyone has a folk taxonomy, you know, and they're very diffuse over the entire planet.
Yeah.
And they are used even today in a common vernacular. We call them today common names. So someone calls it the Gary Oak. Someone else calls it the Oregon White Oak. Someone else calls it some other kind of oak. We all call it. So we had to. Linnaeus's brilliance and why he gets the credit that he deserves is he said, let's create another whole other system above this that is universal across everything.
Mm.
His universal language that he chose is Latin. And Latin, of course,
right.
is the basis of so many languages, especially in Europe.
Yeah.
If not, it's also very closely related to those, what is the Proto-Indo-European languages.
That's right.
So all the way over into India, all those languages have like a big, almost, you know, you could find those all going down to one single ancestral language.
It's their Latin.
Exactly. Yes. So they, so he started this and he started to name these trees. So the cypresses, he named that first one, that type species of the Italian cypress that was in his ballpark. It was in his wheelhouse. He said, yeah, there he goes. Cypressus sempervirens. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one. There weren't a whole lot of other cypresses growing around there. So once other people found them later in the world and elsewhere in the world and brought them over and said, oh, well, now Linnaeus has had this cool idea. We're going to call it this. So then they started calling everything a cypress in the genus Cypressus. But then in sometime in between the last century, people started to really split that apart with the New World cypresses, the ones that found over in North and South America. And then there is these other sections. And then there's like in one of our websites that you can go to, there's five different papers from 2002 to 2012. And each one basically said, we found a new one over here in Vietnam. We're going to give it Xanthocyperus. Then we're going to split off Cypressus nucatensis from Camisipparus. And there was like, no. We got to put Camisipparus nucatensis back into Cypressus, and then we got to add this one as Xanthocyperus. That still stays over there. And like, no. All these ones are Hesperocyperus, and then this one over here, we're going to keep that as Cypressus. No. That one should be Calotropis because that's the old one.
Oh my God.
So let's split that back up. Then someone said, well, they're really closely related to the junipers, so let's just like maybe push them closer. And then you're pulling your hair out, like reading through this.
Yeah, I'm pulling my hair out listening to it.
Good. So at the end of the day, they ended up creating like these a bunch of different things and lumping and splitting and lumping and splitting.
Yeah.
And the one thing that stayed basically
wow.
pure is this one type species of the Italian cypress, because that is the thing that can't change. Like that's the rock solid cypress tree. Everything else moving around was coming in and coming out of what it is already
wow.
the sturdy pole stuck in the ground. The last bit, Alex, to pull this all together.
Okay, an epilogue, if
you will. An epilogue, if you will. This tree is named cypress.
Correct.
Cypress comes from the old French cypres, which is from modern French cypres.
Okay.
Which that comes from the late Latin cypressus, which comes from the normal Latin cypressus. Boom. Linnaeus says, okay, this is like in Latin, their term for this tree is cypressus. Therefore, this will be Cypressus sempervirens, the evergreen cypress.
Okay.
So that's where he went back. Cypressus comes from Greek, kyperiso. And that probably comes from some pre-Greek Mediterranean language, which is in the realm where this tree is native, where everyone has been interacting with it and naming and organizing all of the plants in the entire area.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, this is also the case where the name, the common name that we use in English, has a direct line to the initial original name in some weird old Greek, Kyperisos. That is likely the OG folk taxonomic name for this plant.
Wow.
So in this case, because it is a plant that was in the realm of Carl Linnaeus, when he created his official scientific taxonomy that everyone says this is actually a really good way to do it.
Yeah.
He was also in certain places of like a lot of European species, the folk taxonomy and the scientific taxonomy are the same damn thing.
Wow.
So this tree has like all these connections that come back. It's the only thing that's stable. It's the type species, and it is also the folk taxonomic name for this tree, just, you know, translated and transformed over a couple thousand years of you know, language evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the epilogue to add that next like little cherry on top, where it's a crazy saga about taxonomy and how it approaches this tree specifically, and then all of its brothers and sisters away from it.
Casey, I can't imagine a better time to go into our review of the Italian cypress. Mwah, I say.
Oh, it's an Italian chef's kiss.
Here's how we do it. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey.
Alex.
As our resident expert, we begin with you.
All right. I love this tree. And I'm going to say that specifically in comparison to the arborvita. A lot of people would be like, this looks like the arborvita.
Sure.
It grows straight up like the arborvita.
It does, yeah.
I agree. The one thing is, this tree is a little bit tougher than arborvita.
Mm-hmm.
And it can grow in almost any kind of soil conditions. It just kind of, you put it in the ground, it's probably going to be okay. As long as you put it in the ground right and it's not too watery. The arborvita also tend to grow up really spindly and then just kind of bleh, like tip over and like have one big branch break off and tip over in an ice storm,
right,
or something.
Right.
The Italian cypress does not do that near as bad. It maybe has a little tip, a little bit kind of pulls out, but it can kind of chill like that for a while and it can respond and be just perfectly fine.
Mm.
So it has a bunch of qualities that everyone wants in arborvita, but it has them in spades.
Casey, are you saying that the Italian cypress is the thinking man's arborvita?
I think that's exactly what I'm saying.
No. I'm sorry. Casey, are you saying that the Italian cypress is the discerning arborist's arborvita?
That is exactly. I would call it the discerned arborvita.
The evolved arborvita.
That's my folk taxonomic term for it. It's the evolved arborvita.
Take the arborvita, throw it in the fucking trash, replace it with an Italian cypress because you're getting the same thing but better in every regard.
Exactly. And you can probably not water it and it'll be fine after it's established.
Yeah.
So there's that. However, I also have to note that it is still just this little teeny tiny skinny tree. So it doesn't get you a lot, but it has that classical boom, 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 rowness to it. Like its use, like you're saying, as a museum tree.
It serves a purpose.
Spectacular. However, that's where it ends. Don't plant it in your street unless you've planted it to look cool next to another big gigantic tree that you're planting. It's a tree that everyone's like, oh, I just want this nice skinny tree. You're not using it as a tree in that case. You're using it as like a vertical green column. That is a great use for it, but it must end there. However, I think it's still a fine use. It kind of has these pluses, kind of has a minus.
Uh-huh.
I'm giving it big points for being like, again, this one singular thing that stands perfectly clear when the rest of the world around it is buzzing by in blurriness.
Yes.
I love that about this tree, and I love where it grows. So I'm going to give it like it's going to be a 7.5 exactly.
I think that's a wonderful score, Casey.
It feels good.
To me, that's like, you know, like sometimes we'll give like a really solid score.
Yeah.
Like a really well-deserved 6.0.
Yeah, it's like it didn't scrape up to there.
Yeah, it's like congratulations on this 6.0.
Mm-hmm,
I think
mm-hmm.
that's 7.5 to the talent. And I'm doing this a lot with my hand.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, for those of you who don't see, he's clasping all of his fingers together at a point.
Yeah.
As if he is holding a pinch of salt in his hand.
Yes.
Upright.
It's a little stereotypical, but that's fine.
Hey, sometimes you got to feel it, you know?
Casey, 7.5, wonderful score. Here's what I have to say.
What do you got?
I love this subject, this folk taxonomy. This is one of those, sometimes we'll go a whole episode without sparking my interest at all. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Honestly, I signed up for it when we decided to do this.
It's just part of my umwelt, okay?
It is.
However, at the beginning of this episode, I'm very tired today. I didn't sleep last night.
Mm-hmm.
You said, well, I was a little low energy. You said, well, I hope that I can spark your interest with this subject.
Uh-huh.
You said, I think I can.
Yes.
I think I can. I think I can.
I think I can.
Said the Casey train, chugging up the hill of Alex's waning brain cells. And you know what, Casey?
Alex's waning brain cells.
Yeah.
Now that's your next album.
.com.
.com.
You did, Casey.
I did.
You told a fantastic story. In fact, we just applied for the Webbies. I think we should have added best episode on there.
Oh, get out of here.
And done this one. One of my favorite things, one of my favorite yarns you've ever spun on this show. Truly.
Really?
You did a fantastic job.
Oh, yes. Okay. I'm so happy. That really makes me feel good.
And that's just a compliment for you.
Well, thanks.
That's not
back to the Italian
going into my score.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, really fantastically told. A scientific journalist will make of you yet.
Yeah, sounds good. I appreciate it. Thanks.
You're welcome. I started thinking about folk taxonomy. I'm very interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking, what are some other like folk taxonomy? And I immediately thought, we've talked about the river fir before, which is a folk taxonomical name for the Don Redwood.
That's right.
Of the peoples in China around where the Don Redwood is native.
Exactly.
I also thought you were talking about the Greeks. I also, what popped in my head was hippopotamus, which uh-huh. translates directly to river horse.
Yeah, which is hilarious.
And I love any sort of like, this is that thing, but this version of it.
Yeah.
That's a horse, but it's in the river.
Yeah, yeah. They do French, in French, a potato is a pomme de terre.
An apple of the earth.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I love that shit. That's so good. And that's a great way to categorize things. I love doing it constantly. I like the sort of type species-ness of the Italian cypress. I like that it's Italian. I like its form. I like its function. I like its cone.
Hmm?
I'm giving it... you know what? I'm right there with you, Casey. 7.5 golden cones of honor.
7.5. I love it when we land on the same thing. I think the consistency means that we see it the same way.
Yes.
From different
totally.
Perspectives.
We're on the same page here.
Yeah.
And to the Italian cypress, we say, ciao bella.
Ciao bella.
Casey... It's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week, our question's from Marie.
Hi, Marie.
Hello, Marie. Marie says, my background is in ornithology, the study of birds.
Yes.
And wetland restoration and mitigation. And I love all things native plants, Casey.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
I now work for a county environmental department in Maryland.
Okay.
We often require landowners to replace or replant trees if they do silly things like cutting down trees without permission in the critical area. Casey, you have some familiarity with this.
I sure do. Silly is a very kind and gentle way to say it.
We require these replacements to be native and provide a list of suggestions based on the region, soil moisture, amount of sun, etc.
Okay.
However, there aren't too many native plant suppliers locally.
Oh.
So, are cultivars and varietals of native species as good as straight up natives in terms of ecological benefits? For example, red maples grow well here, and every garden store has a cultivar.
Yeah.
Are they as beneficial for animal food habitat, helping native pollinators, supporting native insects, hardiness, etc.?
Gosh, I love that list.
Thanks so much, Marie. Marie, thank you so much. Casey, what do you think? Are the cultivars and varietals as good as the natives, as good as the native species when it comes to ecological benefit?
Yeah, very good question.
Mr. President,
we need an answer, damn it.
My finger's over this red button.
You push me one more time, Croson. Yes, I think it does, but there's a sliding scale, you know?
Oh, sure, like with most things.
Yeah, so if it is such a wacky tree that it is like it's not growing big enough or small enough, or has a certain like it's grafted onto a rootstock that isn't as good or something like that, then you can get a tree that doesn't compete with everything else around it or isn't from the same provenance of a certain place. Are you familiar with that term?
It's a city in Rhode Island, Casey.
Yeah, okay, you're right. We're talking about Maryland here. No, provenance is where something's from, like a seed that is born from a tree that grew up and is from a line of trees that grew up and lived in Georgia.
Okay.
You take those seeds and you plant them in, let's say, New Jersey, then that tree will then open up its leaves because when the light and everything lines up for it, it'll be like, it's springtime.
Right.
Then it's not actually going to be. So the cultivars, a lot of times, are grown elsewhere with different weird things going on with it. And so you don't necessarily know the provenance. You don't know the genes. You don't know if the rootstock is good. Like, there's a lot of questions and unknowns.
Okay.
Surely you can trace this and ask these questions. And they say, yeah, this is, you know, a weird cultivar from over here. Then you might be able to. But the other thing that comes along with it is cultivars are varieties that we cultivated that were some wacky mutation of the tree. Now, if that was a successful mutation in the tree, it probably would have already been an established thing within the natural areas.
Sure.
Does that make some amount of sense?
Sort of an adoptive native species.
Yeah. Well, and also if you have you have a whole big population of trees and this is, million years ago. And then one of those trees puts out some weird mutation that if we humans a million years ago saw that, we'd been like, oh yeah, totally. That's beautiful. It's like this weeping thing or has a different color or something like that. We take that away. We make it into a cultivated variety. It's only live because of people. Now, if we fast forward through that 1 million years and just give that population time, that mutation is either going to survive or not survive. Like, it could just be culled out of the population. And if it's culled out, that means it was an unsuccessful, not good mutation. It didn't offer some advantage or some positive thing to that tree. So the tree dies. And then we don't see that mutation. Maybe it pops up again and just randomly, and then it dies out again. And it does this over millions of years. If that was a useful mutation, then it would survive more and you'd see it throughout the population and it would become a part of that tree's genes, right?
That's evolution.
It's evolution. So cultivars are us basically taking those trees out of evolution and making them work just because we are taking care of them.
Okay.
But if it was put back in the normal area, that gene or whatever those traits are probably aren't really good. So the jury is out. I bet you they're going to be good for all the things. The leaves are still going to be edible for the native flora.
Sure.
They'll still have flowers that the native insects and things will want to get involved with. They'll still rot with the same disease or the same things.
But there's probably a marginal detraction
exactly.
in efficiency. Marie, thank you so much for your question. If you have a question for Casey about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Join us on Instagram @arbitrarypod or support this podcast, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. Please, as always, if you have 2 minutes, rate and review this podcast. 5-star reviews only. Casey.
Alex.
You didn't hear my little, I was being quippy.
Oh, what? Oh, I looked in my email.
That's okay.
Good one.
I don't listen to everything you say. Casey.
Alex.
That's the end of this grand episode of Completely Arbitrary.
But is it the end of the story, Alex?
Casey, what say you?
Well, unbeknownst to you, dear listener, this is a two-parter.
Wait, now, I knew this.
I know, yeah. Well, but I love the dramatic. Alex, next week, we are going to finish up our conversation on taxonomy.
That's right.
And it's going to be a load of pedantic bullshit.
Hell yeah.
But it is the scientific logical end of this ecosystem where it decays down into the simple nuts and bolts. So it's an update as to where taxonomy is now, where you get people being like, no.
Yeah.
Where the science and the folk taxonomy as we see the world come at odds. And again, it's pedantic, but it has a place.
Next week, Casey and Alex put taxonomy into an early grave.
We sure do.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next week. Arrivederci.
Ciao.
Completely Arbitrary.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Abes and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.